This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine every Saturday 10 till 12.
Max Niggle is from Living Positive Victoria, and Max has been involved with...
Do we need to give Max a very quick lesson on how to give good mic?
Yeah, you know how to get...
Or have you done this before, Max?
A few times.
Okay, yes. Right, great. So speak into the microphone, straight on.
Yes.
Don't look
at us.
Don't
wave it around.
I know it's very...
Don't kiss it, but get close to it.
I know it's very hard not to look at us, but, you know...
Well, I'm an eye contact person, so that makes it
really
hard.
I know, okay. So...
Now, Max, what we want to do with you is we want to have two sets of conversations with you. We want to talk about you, your role... And your reflections on your role and the work that you've been doing over the last...
108 years.
108 years, there you go. And we also want to talk about issues for people living with HIV and what's different, what's new, what's changed in that space as well. So we might start with the latter question, if you want. So what's different for people with HIV now?
I think the most defining thing that's different now is the treatments. That are available for people that with such minimal side effects now that they can just get on with their lives and live really happy, healthy, long lives. That's the difference compared to what it was like 30 years ago when most of us were facing imminent death. Mm. So when you think of people being able to go on to treatment, being able to take one or two tablets a day now, minimal side effects, achieving undetectable viral load within a very short space of time, really good immune system function, and of course that means too that they're unable to transmit HIV. Mm. And this is the message we really want to get across.
So this treatment fear. Can be a preventative strategy.
Yeah, so it's called treatment as prevention, and now with PrEP, of course, that's another area, pre-exposure prophylaxis, meaning that...
So we have TAP and PrEP.
TASP and PrEP.
TASP.
Yes, love acronyms in this sector. It's not TAS, it's TASP. But this is now about mutual responsibility. So think about the mutual responsibility that we had 30 years ago when it was condoms and lube. That was protecting us all, and we all adhered to that mantra at the time. Things have changed dramatically, though, in that now that we have a biomedical approach into prevention, along with condoms and lube, it means that people who are HIV negative can take responsibility for their own health, their sexual health and well-being.
By taking PrEP.
By taking PrEP.
A pill a day.
A pill a day. And it's magnificent to see the changes in attitudes that have occurred. And there's this great zero divide for about a decade up until recently where many negative men would refuse to have sex with a positive person.
Yeah. Mm.
And that brings us to the main point, stigma. So what's changed and what hasn't? What has endured most has been stigma against HIV-positive people based upon an historical fear of infection. And that's a word that resonates with a lot of people, but it's also a highly stigmatizing word. HIV infected, it really resonates in making people fearful about disclosure. So there's some of the things that have changed, the treatment approach, the care, the support that's available to everybody. But not only that, about getting people informed that we have to challenge stigma. And it seems that it just doesn't change. And that's about people having this historical narrative based upon some of the awful campaigns that were done in the very early years.
So, Max, you know, in my lifetime, nearly 30 years ago, I worked in the HIV space myself.
Mm.
And the message then was not a positive message.
It wasn't.
We tried to be very optimistic and positive. We talked about the advantages of, you know, safe sex and all that sort of stuff. The message now is very, very different.
Extremely different.
Sorry, I remember one of the sayings, Max, that we used to use about safe sex.
If it's not on,
it's not in.
Yeah, not in. No. I thought it was on.
No, well, but that it had.
On your perspective,
well,
I used to say.
Well, anyway, we won't go there.
So Max, what does this mean? I mean, so all of a sudden, people with HIV now take their medication and can live a normal, healthy life. And not have to think about, you know, and I think of some of my friends who 25 years ago, you know, looked forward at the horizon and thought 5, maybe 10 years.
Yeah.
And started to make plans around that. So started to do things like, you know, spend up their cash, use up their reserves, you know, party hard or travel hard. You know, what's occurring now then?
Well, I think there are certainly people who did do all of what you've just talked about, and what it did to them was to mean they had nothing left.
Yeah.
And suddenly they are surviving. Mm. Suddenly they're thinking there might be a future. How then are they going to survive? How are they going to return to work? And yet with more recently diagnosed people, that literally they are just getting on with their lives. And that makes an extraordinary difference to the attitudes about living with HIV.
So there is a cohort of people with HIV who are essentially disabled and living on disability pensions as such.
So if you look at some of the figures that are around, about 10 to 15% of people are not doing well.
Mm.
Now, that can be because of a long-term diagnosis. It could be that they're not responding to the medication as well. It could be that they're not getting the sustained increases in their immune system.
Mm.
And that for them, it's a really difficult situation that they're still on a disability support pension. They're still requiring a lot of support to get on with their lives as well as they can. There are underlying issues that could be psychosocial, it could be drug and alcohol, and it goes on and on. So they're the cohort of people that we really have to remember with all of these great messages around treatment as prevention and PrEP and everyone living well. There are some who are not.
And, of course, on top of that, you've got compounding and impacting stigma.
Yeah.
Yes.
Both self-stigma and societal stigma on those individuals.
So if you think back as to why people wouldn't disclose their HIV status, that was internalised stigma. That was a fear of disclosure, a fear of rejection, and a fear of what might happen to them if they disclose.
Mm.
I would say, too, for many people more recently diagnosed, that it is also very difficult to disclose. But where do they get the support and develop the resilience to do that? That's when it comes back to accessing the support that they need, such as peer-based programs. And that's where Living Positive Victoria and Victorian AIDS Council do a lot of work.
There's a message, Tass, which is... It's a bit of a question.
It's a question from Jonathan.
Yeah.
Why were the campaigns in the 80s problematic? They saved lives, yes. Public got scared, but lives were saved. If you drink and drive, you're an idiot. Same thing with HIV. In advanced society, there is no reason for infection. Jonathan. What do you think, Max? What's your reaction to that?
Go on.
Oh, jeez.
Come on, straight between the eyes.
Look, there's no reason for infections, whether it's sexually transmitted infections or HIV or hepatitis C or B. However, let's go back to human behaviour. Humans will take risk.
I'm distracting Max because I'm flicking through the Victorian HIV AIDS strategy. It's actually called the Victorian HIV strategy.
No AIDS.
That's good.
Mm.
And what I really like, apart from the fact that it's beautifully laid out and beautifully presented, it actually features photographs of people who work in the space. And there's a gorgeous photo of you, Max.
Oh, thank you.
The green top, the green jumper really brings out the green in your eyes. It's lovely.
So I want to go back to you know, the question, which was, okay, the campaigns were pretty brutal, and they were. The point is, the public got scared, but lives were saved. I can't disagree with that, but people were stigmatised. And it's easy to say, if you drink and drive, you're an idiot. There is no excuse in advanced society for infection, correct, but it's not as simple as that. People don't have sex one way or at the same time in the same place under the same circumstances and for the same reasons. So to say, I'll let you, Max. You,
thanks, Max.
You've got an opinion. You've got an opinion.
I've certainly got an opinion. Look, the campaigns in the very early years did raise a lot of awareness about HIV, but all it was HIV equals AIDS equals death. That is what stigmatised the disease and the condition. Let's now think about what that did to people who were diagnosed HIV positive and how they felt then about being treated as outcasts, as vectors of disease, as untouchables. That was the fear. That was the enduring stigma that really started with that those campaigns. Now we have a very much more sophisticated approach to campaigns, especially around health promotion, being aware of HIV transmission, how it happens, but also what you can do to prevent it. So yes, there should be no reason with PrEP and with treatment as prevention for any HIV transmissions to occur. But it still happens. Why does that happen? Because there's about 10% of people who are not actually getting regularly tested. Mm. Thereby, it is those people who are do not know their HIV status that are actually driving the epidemic of transmissions at the moment. So my message is people should be getting more regularly tested. People should be aware of the risks and that there are other prevention strategies that they can use where each person can take mutual responsibility. So let's not talk about people living with HIV being the drivers of HIV transmission. When they're on treatment, they cannot transmit HIV, full stop, endorsed globally by science and research, not just a little activist like me making that statement. But I've known for 14 years that I am as unable to transmit HIV. My viral load has been undetectable for that period of time. However, it didn't stop me being fearful of transmitting HIV until we had those definitive statements that quite some time ago with the Swiss statement and more recently the partner study, which really made a huge impact, saying for all people who are having unprotected sex, no condoms, there were no HIV transmissions occurring in that study, except for people who went out and had maybe casual sex, and there were some. So let's come back to how the fear started in the first place, how that fear has endured, and it was the campaigns that really made that impact.
That's a very interesting point, Max, because what you're in fact saying is that those campaigns had unintended consequences.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. And in fact, fueled stigma.
Yes.
Which in our community.
Which is still there. And this is, you know, despite what you're saying, Max, there are people that still hold, you know, that there is still stigma attached. Some of it internalised by some people, but certainly as a general statement, it is still there and it is still very strong, isn't it?
It's still very strong, and it comes back to one thing. Get up to date with the facts. Get with the real news, the good news that's happening right here and now, and forget about the past. So why does stigma still endure? People are not aware of the current circumstances. Mm. Whether you're gay, whether you're a man who has sex with men, or whether you're a heterosexual, you need to be more fully informed. That in itself, and getting allies who will challenge people's statements about HIV and the stigmatising statements of those people, or they're infected with HIV, and to challenge those statements to say that person is a human being who has the same rights as you do, and why would you speak about somebody that way to separate yourself when in reality you might have a secret life and you're actually going out and having sex unbeknownst to anybody else but taking risks.
Yeah.
What an amazing change in 30 years.
extraordinary. I mean, if I, being told in 1988 that I probably had around about 6 months to live, based upon the survival data at the time, here I am 30 years later talking about living with HIV in 2017.
And you're going to die of old age.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, suddenly old age is appearing in, on the horizon. Suddenly retirement age is appearing. So how, you know, how
and
do we deal with
that?
Are
these things that you plan for?
Well, if I, if you know, I've been fortunate to be able to keep working all of the time, and that is not the case for many people from in the earlier days and right up to this current state. So how do we think about people who are living with HIV and ageing, and what are we going to do about it is the question, and what I'd like to talk a little bit about as to what work is being done in that sphere.
Talk Please. To us about it.
So through you know, Living Positive Victoria and a Commonwealth-funded grant, we did what was called the Senior Voices Project. This came out of the...
We've had somebody on this show about that project.
Yeah.
In fact, it was John Malnaring when he was
John
working
Malnaring.
With you. Yeah,
that's right. So it was a three-year project that was funded under the funding out of the LGBTI strategy launched by Mark Butler in 2012 and subsequently re-endorsed by the current government. That project was about HIV-positive speakers who identify as older being trained to go and educate aged care providers and staff around challenging stigma, around getting with the up-to-date facts, and what it might be for a person who is requiring in-home support or having to enter aged care and suddenly realising that they may have difficulties in disclosing their HIV status, let alone their sexuality. Why? Why is this happening nowadays? People with inherited belief systems who are bringing those things into work and being fearful of somebody disclosing their sexuality or their HIV status. I'd like to ask the question, does that happen with somebody who discloses that they're living with cancer or they're a cancer survivor or that they've got diabetes or that they've had MS? Does that create the same sort of fear that HIV does?
Yes.
Or the fact that this client is a gay person?
Yes. I think we know the answer to all those questions, don't we?
It's stigma. And it's not being educated. So that project developed a handbook called Positive Caring, written by Liz Croc at RDNS. She manages the HIV team, and it's a really comprehensive handbook on everything you need to know about whether you're a person living with HIV or caring for someone living with HIV, family, friend, and or professional carer. What can you do to ensure that you look after that person with respect and an awareness and being inclusive in your behaviours towards them?
Now, we've got a message, Max, here.
Another one.
Lovely Steve.
Yes, from Steve, and he says, "Hi chaps, great to hear you discussing this issue with Max. I've been disabled physically as a long-term survivor. Mentally, it's very, very tough also. I do get wonderful support from VAC. I sometimes wish we had awards for those of us who have survived so long." You'd get one, Max.
I think we need to acknowledge long-term survivors.
Yes.
I think they're the unforgotten heroes of the epidemic. And I really concur with Steve that if you look at some of the awards that Living Positive Victoria give out at their annual general meetings, for example, we acknowledge people who have contributed long-term to the sector, whether it's people living with HIV or our allies who have been supporting us. So, there's an org called Kick-Ass Syndrome in the US, and that's about long-term survivors who are trying to re-establish a sense of community, acknowledging that they're going to be going into retirement and that they seem to have lost their connection to community.
What's it called again?
Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass.
Yeah, so HIV and AIDS long-term survivors.
Yeah.
Right.
It started off in on the West Coast.
We've almost run out of time, and Max, when I was speaking to him about coming on, I can't talk for two segments. What are we going to talk about?
We've barely got a word in. Max!
But, Max, I've said this before, we need Living Positive on this show once a month, right? talking about the issues for the positive community, and the positive community, you know, is LGBTIQ, right? We need Living Positive to do this once a month, and I won't take no for an answer.
Well,
done. There you go.
We've done the deal, and Brent, Susie and Randy at work are really supportive of your invitation for us to be able to do this.
And we can rotate you through. Yeah. We can have all of you on.
Well, that
we could just get Max in and give him a microphone. We just leave.
Share the love.
I mean, look, Susie's been there forever.
Yeah.
And she's gorgeous, of course. I've worked with Brent in other contexts, and I've always enjoyed working with Brent and love to have him in the studio.
So it's not just about me being on your show, Macca.
No, it's about keeping the issues alive.
Yes. Yeah.
But I remember way back when you were our executive officer, and we used to have many conversations about what we could do in supporting people living long-term with HIV.
Max, thank you very much for coming in today. It's fantastic.
And we now have to face up to that reality.
Of course.
You know, there are a huge number of people that are being forgotten in a lot of ways, and we need to remember we owe them a debt of care and to look after them. They're members of our community and we need to look after them.
Yeah. Thank you for coming in, Max.
It's been my absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.